You're listening to Beyond the Pipe with Chris Morgan and Sean Ree.
Yeah, man, you got to do the finger swipe on your respirator. Anyone out there working, you got to come in your shop, do a little finger swipe around the seal of your respirator. Or, you know, my dad always taught me you take the gloves and you smack them on like a table or the ground in case there's like some spiders in there. You don't know. There's spiders everywhere, man. Like, I got spiders that I used to let live in my shop. Like,
why?
I have a theory about this, right? So every Black Widow you see, you kill it, period. No exceptions. Black Widow, Egg Sack, the whole bit. You kill them. After a while, at least where I am in California, a daddy long legs will assume that web or that location where the Black Widow was. It happens every time. Daddy long legs will eat Black Widows. So now you don't have any Black Widows in your yard because they only live in very particular locations, right? So, and that's outdoor. Indoor, yeah, you get Black Widows, but you also get these, like, fuzzy brown, like, house spiders.
And yeah, we call them hobo spiders.
No, these ones aren't poisonous.
Oh. Hobo spiders are very poisonous.
I thought hobo spiders were recluse.
No, there's a difference. So, brown recluse is the brown fuzzy ones that doesn't look like it has punching bags, or, like, boxing gloves, I mean.
On its face?
Yeah. The ones without boxing gloves are brown recluses. The ones with boxing gloves coming off, like, of their, you know, pinchers or whatever the hell they are, those are hobo spiders.
And yeah, we don't have those here.
Yeah, they're like a Northwest thing, and they're aggressive. They'll, like, chase you across the room, and they're mean, and if you get bit by one, basically there's, like, flesh-eating poison that will just continue to fucking eat your skin.
That is literally the brown recluse.
Yeah, they're very similar, but they are different. It's two different spiders.
All right, you see them here. I mean, we do have recluses here. Everyone pretends that they don't exist here, but everyone also says there's no scorpions where I live. Like, oh, there's no scorpions.
We live in a world where people pretend stuff is the opposite of what it is. So.
It's opposite world, man.
Yes. It's like we live in the upside down.
The upside down. It's a larger projection. It's the larger universe of the Mandela effect. But it's yeah, man. Like inside though, we have these little brown fuckers, and they get pretty big, man. They get to like the size of a quarter. And I don't have them as much anymore, but they hang out behind like posters or pictures you have on the wall. And then every once in a while, I see one, like, run out and, like, eat a bug.
I'm, like, sitting in my shop right now looking around at all the millions of places that there could be spiders right now.
Those don't bother me, man. Like, big spiders, I've never had a problem with tarantulas. I used to have tarantulas. I used to have, you know, giant black scorpions. Like, I that stuff does not freak me out. It's the little poisonous bastards that bother me. Black widows, we get a lot of brown widows here, too. Which are not as poisonous, but if they do bite you, it sucks. Like, you might get a fever, maybe, but you're most likely just going to be in pain for, like, a few days.
I can't remember the last time I got bit by a spider in my shop.
I get bit all the time.
I think I'm going to probably spray my shop this weekend, though.
I get bit by, like during the winter specifically, they like to come inside. And... you know, like you take a jacket off, you put it on the ground or you put it on a chair or something. You come back like a day later, you put it on, you might get like a bite, but it's nothing like noticeable. It's like a mosquito bite where you're like, well, how the hell'd that get there? So,
and that's when you pull your pocket knife out of your pocket and stab that motherfucker off on the ground.
Spider code of the dome.
Yep.
I don't know.
I got my new spider code in the mail.
You did. Which one did you get?
The Delica or yeah. Delica?
Delica.
Delica 4.
It's a nice medium.
With the plastic knife. G10 handle or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I like it. The blade is a little wider than I would prefer. So it's not as easy to carry as my previous knife.
Yeah, but then you could use it to, like, put peanut butter on celery. Or something.
I suppose I could do that.
I'm not dipping it. I love when I see these guys on, like, Instagram, and they're like, look at, you know, look at this burger I made, and they, like, cut it in half with their pocket knife. I'm like, ugh. Like, dude, I'm, like, cutting plants with my knife a lot because I do a lot of gardening and stuff. Some of them are not edible plants. And I'm not cutting my food with that, man. Like, that's gross. I think that's gross.
Yeah, I've never really done that either. I mean, to a very, very small point, I'm kind of a germaphobe.
Yeah, I think everyone is.
Not a germaphobe, like, with people, necessarily. Like, this whole last year, whatever. But, like, I wouldn't use my knife to cut, like, to gut a fish and then the next day forget to clean it or something and then, like, make a sandwich with it. I wouldn't do that.
That's what my grandpa used to do. Like, I think it's like an old world thing. You're just like, ah, it's fine. It grows immunity. You know, but he'd like straight up dig a potato out of the ground with a knife in like a compost pile. We're not talking like clean dirt. We're talking like there's like eggshells and like, you know, beet greens and like all kinds of crap that he was composting. And he would like use his knife on something and then he'd go inside and he'd like cut a thing of salami off. And you're like,
just dip it right in the mayonnaise jar.
You can't do that, dude. You can't. It's like, it's the same. I give my father-in-law crap about it all the time. Like, he'll straight up go and like, if he has to give his dog pills, he'll scoop like a finger of peanut butter and then give his dog a pill and then he'll go eat some chips. I'm like, oh, wash your hands. Like, this is, you know, I don't know. My dogs, like, yeah, I don't even like my, like, dogs licking my face. I don't like that stuff. And I don't consider myself necessarily germaphobe, but I've seen my dogs eat like cat shit or like go after like some weird hole in the ground and there's a gopher in there, like a dead gopher. So I was like, nah, it's, I don't know. I guess in that fact, I'm sort of probably more of a germaphobe than you are, but I don't know.
I don't, like, common sense. I don't think about it enough to probably be considered a germaphobe. I guess do things a little differently. I do things normal, like not use my knife for things and then also go make food with it. Like, the knife in my pocket's not for that.
It's not a food knife. Yeah. I mean, we also live, I guess, in a society where we can do that. Like, some people, not just regionally, but culturally, that's not even necessarily a thing. Like specifically, like, the Maasai in Africa will, you know, harvest milk or harvest blood from, like, a cow with the knife that they use to, I don't know, sharpen a spear or a trap or something like that for another animal.
That's not kosher.
It's probably not, but I think that's a good thing to kind of think about too, is like, what is like acceptable in the region that you're in?
Well, I think it comes down to utility and what you're using stuff for every day. I mean, you know, everybody has a different idea of what an everyday carry is, an EDC.
Yeah.
And some people need a Leatherman, and I don't. I just don't have a need for that because I'm surrounded by toolboxes usually.
True.
And there's one in my house and in my shop and all this kind of stuff. So I've never seen the point in carrying something huge like a Leatherman when I could just easily carry just a small knife.
It changes seasonally too. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, right now, I'm wearing fairly lightweight shorts and a t-shirt. I'm not even wearing shoes right now because I didn't really feel like putting shoes back on to do this podcast. So, in that respect, on a day-to-day in the summer, because it is, you know, 90 to 95 degrees most days in the summer here. Sometimes it's 105. Sometimes it's 110. I'm not carrying around a Leatherman. I'm like lightweight shorts. I'm carrying around usually like a Spyderco, Delica, or Delica. I don't know how they pronounce it, but during the winter,
I think it's probably Delica.
It might be Delica
because Delica just sounds like it's going to be delicate and you wouldn't want to use it for things. But
yeah,
I think this is a pretty substantial knife for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can correct us if we're wrong, but don't expect us to change the way we're saying it. I said what I said. But like during the winter, you know, I'm wearing jeans and still a t-shirt because it's California, I guess, and boots, and I'm carrying around Leatherman because I don't want to have to walk back to my shop if I need to fix something or if I'm out and about. And the thing is, I've used Leatherman since I was a kid. I want to say I bought one of the original Waves because now we're on version 2, in my opinion. And actually, funny enough, they reached out to me about a year ago to do some like testing, like beta testing on their tools.
That's pretty cool.
And I thought it was just going to be kind of like, because I've done these before for other tool companies. Smaller tool companies, like, hey, we got this new ruler and we want you to try it out. But this is like, there's a handful of guys that do this, I believe. And they had me test a tool that I can't even talk about because it was like super early days. Like this was like they made a prototype and then they made another prototype that could go out to be tested. And that's what they sent, like, I think 6 or 7 people.
Oh, I think you were telling me about this. It was like a flamethrower / butter knife / spork.
Yeah. And it has wheels and a motor inside. So you can hop on it and it's like a roller skate.
Okay.
So, I mean, so they had me test this secret tool, and I loved it. Like, it was awesome. I think I tested it for, like, a month or 2 months or something like that. And I did all kinds of stuff with it, and I was astounded. And to most people, you're like, oh, who cares? It's just a new tool, whatever. The amount of detail that goes into an item, even if it's just a regular pocket knife, a Spyderco pocket knife, Swiss Army knife. I mean, the Swiss Army knife is a massive increase in utility. Like, I've never really carried a Swiss Army knife, but Leatherman has done it to like this next level, right? So they created this tool and it has features that don't exist on any other tool. And, you know, I had to, you do a debrief and you answer questions and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I was like, can I keep this? And he's like, no, hell no. Like, there's no way. Like, I signed a non-disclosure agreement to do this and all that. So I had to send it back, which is a bummer. But a couple months ago, they sent me another tool to try. And they let me keep it. And it's not on the market yet. And it's awesome. And I still can't really talk about it. But it's pretty cool. It's not as cool as the first one. But because this was nearing distribution, the distribution stage or the real, you know, manufacturing stage where they were going to put it out, they were like, yeah, you can just keep it. So mine has like, it says like Dev 1 and all this like cool stuff on it, not for sale.
Oh, that's badass.
So it's pretty badass, but
that's
going to
show up on eBay in a couple of years for $500.
It means more to me than that. I mean, like, think about it. Like, one of your favorite brands, it could be anything. Be like, you know, Buffalo Trace, you know, sends you a bottle of something that's not even released yet. And you're like, fuck yeah, dude, this is dope. Or people that are really into, I don't know, skateboards. You know, they send you a new skateboard. This is like, you know, you can test it out. Maybe you get to keep it. Like, yeah, it's a feather in your cap. It's cool.
Well, it's cool to be a part of a testing phase like that, because I don't think a lot of people realize how much development and thought actually does go into something, especially something that's meant to be an everyday carry. Because I mean, my previous knife that I carried every day, basically for over a year, was a Ken Onion Leek. And I bought it just because I needed the utility of having a straight blade, because it made wiring my house easier. I was actually looking for a hooked, but like a hawk, I think it's a hawk bell, with a little bit of a under, like downward curve. And I couldn't find it, so I got the straight one instead, and I ended up loving it. And so it's been hard to find something to replace that. So Chris talked me into trying the Spyderco because it's just way better steel. And I'm getting used to the blade. And I could have got the same type of straight blade, but I was like, you know what? I've got two of the other one. Let's see if I can branch out a little bit. And I think in a lot of ways, they're kind of like pipes. Like, you get to know them over time, and you get to know what you can do with it, what they're capable of. And I think during the development stage, they probably have to consider, okay, how many different people think this part's important? How many different people think this part's important, and we can swap this one because it's better? Things like that. Like, I think there's so many products out there that need to go through that, you know, that stage. Yeah. And people don't realize how much actually goes into it.
Especially multi-tools, you know, like, was it Lavoulet or what, that company that puts out that real high-end pipe tool? It's got a tamper and it's got a scraper and it's got a poker and all that kind of stuff. And those are great, but they're crazy expensive. It's like, you know, everyone has to have an IM Corona Old Boy. And then you see that there's other companies that come out with a similar tool, but it's not an Old Boy.
Yeah, like I've got the Karibi Kabuto.
The Karibi, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I love it. I mean,
Zycar makes one too. This pipeliner or sideliner or whatever.
Oh, they've got one called. In the same format.
Same kind of thing, flip top and a horizontal striker, yeah. But
which is cool. I mean, they work.
They work. I mean, what is your ultimate goal? You need to produce fire with a knife. You need to cut something. It needs to have a relatively good edge. And through my sort of, not just experience in the past, you know, with scouts or just with being a knife enthusiast or even with the blacksmithing, I've learned a lot to the point where there is a point that you're paying for, you're paying and you're not getting a real ROI.
Well, you know, it's just like all the ads on like Instagram. Like I see one that comes up all the time, I think is Meissen Knives, M-I-S-E-N. And they've always got these pictures or these videos of them like slowly like zoomed in with like this B-roll footage of them, you know, slicing a grape with like a millimeter worth of a slice so it's all see-through and everything. And that's cool, but realistically, I could do that with any blade.
The chef's knives, right?
Yeah, the Meissen chef's knife. You could do that with any blade. That particular blade is not – it doesn't matter.
Well, the big one that they've been pushing is the Serbian cleaver. That was like all the rage for like, still it is. They're still pushing those things. The Serbian cleaver is sort of like it's a cleaver that has sometimes an upswept edge, but also it has like a real heavy drop on the point. And, you know, I don't know all the details of it. I have one. I got one from Mike Jones Knife and Tool. Oddly enough, I own a few of his knives, but I won a contest and I was like, holy shit, this thing is rad. The problem is, and I've told him this, the problem is that it is just too damn sharp. I know that sounds weird, but there is a point at which something can be too heavy for its sharpness. And this thing is like, it's a cleaver, but it is heavy as all get out. But then the edge on this thing is beautiful. It's so
like it
perfect.
Has too much of a like too acute of an angle.
Yeah, like if you messed up, you could definitely remove not just your fingers but your hand.
Yeah,
like it's so freakishly sharp. I won't use it. Sorry, Mike. I will not use that cleaver because it is just too damn sharp. Like it's too fine of an edge for how heavy it is. I'm straight up afraid that if I make a mistake, it's not just going to give me a cut. It's going to take the tip of my finger off.
Like, so couldn't you just put a different bevel on it?
I don't want to touch it. Like, I think it's amazing. It's a gorgeous knife.
Well, it's kind of like having, you know, like when I was in high school, I was in my dad's shop and I was just fooling around with this double-sided axe that I had because I was chopping wood. And I was like, well, I need to have the sharpest knife possible or the sharpest axe possible. So I'm out there with like an angle grinder to set the bevel the way I wanted it. And then I took a file and then a stone and I made this thing to where you could basically shave with it. My dad came out. He's like, well, that's fucking stupid. he dulled it for me because he's like, that's all you need to cut wood with. You don't need it to be that sharp. It's like, yeah, okay, I guess.
It depends on the type of axe too, because you know you have like a Swedish style carving axe. You want that sucker to be razor sharp because carving tools need to be very sharp. But if you're doing like, I don't know, a felling axe or something that's doing a lot of weight, you know, a real heavy axe. It doesn't have to be that sharp. And with a double bit axe like that, and someone's going to correct us, probably going to be Leif Backus, because that guy knows more about axes than I could ever store in my melon. You don't sharpen both ends the same. So one end of a double bit axe is going to be slightly more blunted because you're going to be digging with it a lot of the times, not digging, you know, a hole, but, you know, getting rid of roots, or you do your dirty work with that. And then you have your fine edge for making your nice cuts. It could be completely off, but that's just how I've always done it. I don't have a lot of use for a double bit axe. I do have an axe collection, and I love Gransfer's Brook. But, you know, along with EDC, no one's carrying an axe on their EDC, period. Never seen it done. Never going to happen.
Maybe been to some, Montana?
Well, maybe, I'm just maybe if you're in forestry or something. But, like, I've never had a use for an axe in my day-to-day escapades. But when it comes down to knives, though, you do also have to look at what kind of daily use do you have. Like, a lot of the times during the summer, I'm carrying a Spyderco Dragonfly. It's a small little knife, gets the job done. Let's face it, 90% of the time, you're opening boxes with your knife. You are putting your knife on the Amazon box, and you're cutting the tape, and that is what most people do. Oh,
first world problems, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's kind of, when you think about that, you're just, okay, let's just go for a nice, sharp, small knife. I prefer very lightweight knives, personally. I don't need a knife to hack through a 2x4.
No.
I'm not skinning deer on a daily basis. Not that you need a heavy knife for that, but I don't really care about a heavy knife. I do have them.
Yeah. But well, I think the difference, and what I'm getting used to with my new knife, my Spyderco, is it's lighter than my Leek, but it's bigger just because of the materials. Like, the other one had metal scales. Like, it was, the whole knife was metal, and this one is not.
Yeah.
But it's got more of a grip. I mean, I can have my whole hand on it if I wanted to, which is great, which makes the blade feel shorter, which it's not. If it's shorter, it might be maybe a quarter inch, but I mean, whatever. I didn't need, I'm opening Amazon boxes, you know, so
yeah.
I don't need much more of that. I mean, honestly, I could carry a freaking razor knife if I really wanted to.
I used to carry a folding box cutter.
Yeah.
Because my friend turned me onto that, and he was like, oh, dude, you could put ceramic blades in there. You could put titanium nitride blades. You know, they make all these cool blades for them. They make little hawkbill box cutting blades. I'm like, that's really rad. But
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, dude, so much weird stuff. Like, they'll have like a little hook on the end. And I did that for a while, but They're too flimsy for me. I really enjoy, I'm a through and through Spyderco guy. I've done the Benchmade thing. I've done the, what's that other, I forget.
But you got rid of your Benchmades for safety issues, didn't you?
Yeah, I just was not satisfied having the small little thumb stud. Like, I'm not a Gucci knife person. Like, I don't have a knife roll with all my folders that have, you know, fancy inlays, and like, oh, this one has a saber grind, and it's, you know, got all the specific crap on it. Look at my, you know, anodized aluminum grips. Like, I don't care about that, because I am going to F that knife up, and when I do, I'm going to get a new one. And for me, the Spyderco Delica is probably my primary. Close secondary would be the Dragonfly. I tend to, if I can, go with a higher end steel. Like, my Dragonfly is one of them is a ZDP 189, which is an exceptionally hard steel, but it will hold an edge longer than anything else I have. Or if I go to like my Yojimbo, which is sort of more of a big boy Spyderco, it's kind of expensive. I love that knife, but, and that's got I think it's a Crovan steel or something on it.
I think expensive is relative, just like with pipes.
It is, yeah.
I mean, people might think that my pipes are expensive, while others might think they're very affordable. I think it's the same thing with a knife, too. Like, I mean, I'm cheap, so I had, like, a bunch of Amazon points. So I got my Spyderco half off, which was cool.
That's good.
But, I mean, it's obviously worth the full price, too. Totally. My last knife was cheap, like 45 or 50 bucks, and I used it every day. So I was like, well, if I'm going to use this new one every day, spending $80 on it, which I didn't, you know, I got half off, but if I paid full retail on it, that's not bad. I mean, if it's something that you carry and use every day, divide that by 365. I mean, that's really freaking cheap.
I've got like 9 of them, like Spyderco's. I just, every time I see the like a new one come out, I'm like, oh, I kind of want that in brown. Or, oh, it's got a Warncliffe blade. Oh, I got to get that. Like, I just got, and this is over the course of like, you know, 6-7 years I've done that. But I saw that they came out with the H1 Salt Dragonfly in Hawkbill. It's serrated, which I do not like for safety reasons. Like, I feel the same way.
And those are for like the ocean, right? Like salt water.
They're for divers or for people that work on boats or something like that. They H1 does not rust. It also doesn't hold an edge very well because it lacks
kind of like stainless.
It's kind of the same premise. Like, it lacks a lot of the carbon that it would need to hold the edge in the first place. That's not to say that there are very good stainless steels now. I'm blanking on some of the higher end ones, but they will hold an edge at the same level or better than some carbon steels. You know, they end up kind of going into the range of like, you know, like Damasteel is great. You know, a lot of the Crucible steels are excellent, and they're very clearly rated. You know, this one has this much hardness. This one has this much whatever. And then they give you like the happy medium steels. So, I mean, they go up from what used to be like considered a premium steel. That premium steel, like ZDP 189, is not technically a high-end steel anymore. It's hard to find on knives. But then there's other stuff that came out that people are using that are just like, what, this thing is, you know, really forgiving to sharpen, but then it'll hold an edge better than 99% of the tool steels out there.
And what steel was that?
There's a bunch of them. I mean,
I guess it's all personal preference, but what do you think is like, what do you think is more important? Do you think it's more important for something to hold an edge longer or be soft enough that somebody could do a touch-up sharpen on it when they don't have a ton of experience doing it?
Well, I mean, you don't have to use stones. You can use diamond. Like, I use diamond for everything, for my touching up. I don't use water stones on anything except, I don't know, maybe carving.
The only thing I do stones on is my razors, my straight razors.
I don't think you really need it. I mean, we have
On a straight razor you do.
On a straight razor you do because you have to get the fineness. You have to get the high polish and make sure you produce a nice...
At least 11,000 grit to be really, really good.
Yeah. And in fact, when you say that, it's kind of funny because at its core, a knife is just a piece of something that is harder than the thing you're cutting. And that's all it is. Like, if you were to go to any tool. No, yeah, I know. But like, a lot of people think it has to be this like super high end steel to cut something. When in reality, if you had a shard of obsidian, you could break down an entire deer and it would be the sharpest frickin' knife you've ever had. Like a piece of obsidian.
You mean dragonglass, like on Game of Thrones?
Dragonglass. That's what I'm saying, though. Like, I have obsidian here and I mean, it'll cut through anything. Like any soft, fleshy material, it just, I mean, you can make these micro cuts in leather or whatever. The problem is that it's not a durable edge, so you have to touch it up constantly. That's why wherever you see a butcher working, they're constantly touching the edge up on these knives because, well, there's other reasons
for that. Well, it's like with a straight razor, you pretty much strop it before every shave, and then, you know, you might do a touch-up hone on a barber's hone every fifth or sixth shave, depending on how, you know, coarse your beard is. And then you might never actually do a true hone except for, you know, every 30 or 40 shaves, depending on how you use it.
It all depends on what you're doing with it. Like, I don't know. I mean, like an axe, for example, is like 4140. That is not a very, it's not a very good cutting steel, but it is excellent for hammers and axes, and it ends up being really the industry standard. But when it comes to like knives, you're not going to want to make a knife out of 4140 because your job is cutting and light duty tasks. Whereas like having a stainless axe would probably not be, in my mind, it'd be kind of silly. I would want a carbon steel for that, and I would want it tempered properly. I've done a lot of work with D2 recently, and D2 is a freaky metal. It's very hard to forge. Like actually when I say forge, you're heating it up and hammering it and spreading it and moving it with a hammer hot. The problem is if you dip below a certain temperature and you hit it, it could still be colored. Like it could still be red or faintly red, and you hit it and that piece of metal will shatter. It needs to be forged at extremely high temperatures. So what most people do with the D2 or a lot of the stainlesses, they will generally just buy it and grind it. And then the heat treating for a lot of stainlesses and D2, because it's considered like a quasi stainless. So it's a carbon steel, but it exhibits certain stainless-esque properties. And basically what you would do is you would, you know, grind it out, get your finished bevels and everything. And then to heat treat it, you heat it up really hot and you hold it. It's been a little while since I've worked with this, so I'm blanking on the exact numbers, but you're looking up around like 1900 degrees and you hold it there, you know, in an oven, and then you take it out and clamp it between two thick plates of aluminum and then blow compressed air through it. That's how you quench that steel. It's not an oil quenching or water quenching steel.
Why?
Because that quenches it. That's just how the molecular structure works. You heat it up really hot and you hold it. Again, blanking on the exact formula. And then it's in foil pouches too, because you don't want it burning, and you don't want it carving up and getting scale all over it, because that actually does defeat the it kills the process of hardening it, because it does insulate it to some degree. You foil pouch it, and then you clamp it between like 1-inch thick plates of aluminum, and the colder the better. If you can stick those things in the freezer before you do it, that's even better. And you just clamp it and you blow cold air, and it sucks the heat out fast enough to where it locks in those carbon molecules and all the other components of the steel, and creates what that steel becomes. Completely changes it on a molecular level.
That's crazy. That's kind of like, it's amazing to think how this has been figured out. And now, I mean, we have all the scientific ways of figuring that out, but think about like Japanese katanas.
Yeah.
And how they actually figured out that by quenching the spine at a different rate as the blade, you'd get a super sharp and very durable edge, but then you'd also have a little bit of flex with the rest of it, yeah. Which is why it was one of the best blades ever made, because it was actually quenched in two different parts essentially.
Yeah, and they do it on smaller scale with like sanmai, and they different lamination techniques. And then in the Middle East, way back, you have Wutz Damascus, which is the Japanese do it in the same sort of fashion, but it seems like it's a more homogenized steel in Japan. But they would take iron ore, just red dirt essentially, and you would build a brick or earthen foundry out of, you know, clay and all your materials. You'd fire it, make sure it's nice and stable, and then you start layering in coal or charcoal. In Japan, I believe they use charcoal and like hay, and they layer that with the red dirt, your iron oxide, and you keep or iron ore, and then you keep pouring it and layering it and layering it and layering it, and you just cook it as hot as you freaking can. At the very bottom, after it's all done, you cool it off, and the very bottom, you'll find this thing called a bloom. And the bloom is essentially iron. And in the process of cooking it in the carbon and all that atmosphere, you've created the beginnings of a steel. And then you start working that and you hammer that down and you fold it and it pops out all the impurities and you're brushing it. And you may end up with like a nice little chunk of steel that you can work into a knife. So you literally took dirt and turned it into a knife.
Isn't it amazing that that was, I mean, they figured that out thousands of years ago, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, how long ago was that actually? I mean, when did we have steel? I might have to look this up.
Okay, we're going to do some
on my Spyderco is made in Japan. It has VG10. And I think I was reading that VG10 is a really good in-between as far as holding an edge and still being fairly, you know,
it's a sweet spot metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if this was actually specifically a Japanese steel or if they just make it there that just...
It's made in Japan. It's made in Seki City.
Yeah, so is that special because it's made in Japan, or is it special because of the type of metal that's being used, or is it the process, or is it the whole thing? I mean,
a lot of steels, believe it or not, I guess some steels have a proprietary element. You know, some of them are patented steels. Crucible, it was a company called Crucible, I believe, Crucible Industries, that had all these really dope patented steels. But they're gone. I don't know the entire story with that. But I mean, okay, so steel dates from 1800 BC in common knowledge, right? Could have been before that. And it looks like maybe India. India has the first real steel around 400 BC, but they found evidence of ironware. See, that's ironware, though. That's different in Anatolia. Iron and steel would be different. So it looks like India would be the first production of steel.
So what do you think the very first EDC was? Like way back in the day, like cavemen. What do you think their first tool that they decided to keep? You think a stick?
Like yeah, a walking stick? I don't think you'd carry a rock with you.
I guess unless you made it into
Or an axe, like a pointy stick, or like a flint axe. You know, there's actually a really neat way you can make a light duty axe. You can forge out a piece that's sort of like a diamond, but one end of the diamond is much longer and pointy, and you can forge that out, and you can actually use that piece to carve the handle if you wanted to, and you carve out the hole. Usually sometimes it's burned through to get the right fit through the handle. And it's just friction fit in there. It's a taper and it friction fits in there. And you can whack away at a tree and chop down a tree. You know, it's funny to me, like, in an archaeological sense to see what you can make with what you have around you. I mean, some of these people, like I just said, like you could take the dirt that you have near you and then like some dried grass and pack that down into a brick. And now you can build a house with it. That shit is fascinating to me. Yeah. And here we are. It's like, oh God, the internet doesn't work. I can't remember how to make cookies.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, in school, you know, they preached how important math was going to be. And obviously, in certain situations, math is extremely important. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of industries that use specific math. But I remember my teacher being like, well, you can't use a calculator because you're not going to have a calculator with you every day. It's like, yeah, I've got two on me right now, like my watch. And for all the hard math, I've got Google.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I brought this up in a previous podcast, but the only time I've actually used like math and I felt like I learned something in school was when I was making sourdough bread and I was like calculating the freaking hydration level on my sourdough bread. Like,
yeah, that's intense.
It's the only time I ever need it.
Yeah. I use geometry, basic geometry, and I do it in my head and you visualize it, and that comes with different people. I think more type A people probably.
Well, that was the only way I was able to learn it. Like I failed algebra.
Same here.
I absolutely failed algebra.
I was bad, dude. But then again, I failed Spanish too, and I used to partially speak Spanish. So,
well, I think it just depends on how you learn too, because I ended up taking out like, I don't know, I think sophomore algebra my senior year because I was absolutely terrible at it. And there was no requirements at my high school. Like, they didn't care. And so I failed it the first couple years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, something clicked and I was like, oh, okay, this is easy. And I got an A+.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I know why.
What?
I know why, because the school system, I mean, you're younger than I am, but the school system that we were in, now I was in I was in like a college preparatory, like a pre-college kind of high school. And I mean, a lot of the teachers there, if you showed interest in something, you ended up learning what they were teaching. A lot of the teachers made it that way. But previous to that, like, I didn't care about math. I cared about science. I cared about history. I cared about, you know, what makes people tick, what makes things work. That's what I use now. I mean, look at it. Like, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not worrying about, I barely even do any science anymore since my days of my marine biology days. I don't even care about it. I like things that I can feel and open up and watch the gears move. But I don't know. I always say this to people too. It's like when someone says like, oh, I wish I could do this. It's like, you have the entirety of human knowledge at your literal fingertips. You carry around a computer with you in your pocket and sometimes on your wrist. If you can't YouTube something, then that's a you issue. That's not, oh, I didn't learn how to do that. I could tell you right now, if you gave me a month, I could learn probably any language just through YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much at our disposal, but I think with technology, it's kind of hindered people in certain ways because it's made us lazy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also brought forth a lot of ways that a lot of different ways that people can learn, like making it fun or interesting. That's why I like listening to, like, I don't know anything about astrophysics, but I love listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson because he teaches all this stuff like in comedy clubs. Because
he makes it fun.
Yeah, they've figured out that if you're smiling while you're learning, you're going to learn faster.
That's right. Yeah, he does.
And, you know, you're going to retain that information. With most everything in school, it was so rigid, at least where I was, that it was so boring. It was like, okay, well, this is a job. I have to do it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I've got to take notes, all this kind of stuff. When in actuality, if things were structured a little bit different to where it was fun or you were making something, I think I would have learned math a lot easier.
We've learned math from pipe making, like thermodynamics from pipe making. Blacksmithing is amazing because you have to learn the science. If you mess up the science, your blade does not quench properly. It doesn't temper properly. So, I mean, yeah, I've been able to learn.
You got a fancy oven that you just get it. You just
I do.
Set it, right?
I've got my high-tech Tesla oven. But even then, you have to know, like, what temp does a steel need to be at? Why is that? Well, it has a higher chromium content. It has to be able to do this and that. And, I mean, I've learned to a certain degree, very rudimentarily. I am not at all what I would even consider to be a beginner blacksmith. Like, I'm very, very amateur. And I just do it for fun. I can make nice knives. I have a great heat treat process. My knives end up being extremely sharp. They have the right amount of flexibility. They have the right amount of hardness. But that's the math. That's like baking. You either do it or you do not do it. There's not like, yeah, it's okay.
Tell that to everybody's grandma.
My aunt
has never had anything but a wood stove, and she cooked birthday cakes on that shit, knowing exactly how much wood
is
in there and what kind.
I don't look at recipes, man, when I cook. I mean, I guess that's an old school skill, but with that too, I mean, back to the knives, like, I guess it really, for me, it's all about what am I going to be doing that day? What do I foresee? But I am always carrying a knife for like most of my life, like since I was probably 12 years old.
See, and I never grew up that way, which is weird because I grew up in Montana, but I mean, I always had a knife or a Leatherman or something in my truck, but it wasn't something I had on my person usually. And then, I don't know, in the last couple of years, I've just, it, honestly, this might be an influence from you, which I appreciate because I've actually...
Probably.
Yeah. I've gotten to a point where, like, if I don't have my knife, I'm like, oh. Like, I really realize how many times a day I reach for it.
Yeah.
Whether I actually take it out or not, it's almost just like a subconscious, like, just pocket check. Just, like, yeah. Make sure it's there.
Dude, it's a force multiplier. Like, yeah, you could rip open a box with your hands, but that's just annoying. Or holy shit, there's a bear coming at me. Now you have a knife.
Yeah, at least knife, kind of knife, a chance.
Knife beats bear. Like, it's just, not that you're going to live. I'm just going to say you're going to have a chance.
Depending on the type of bear, I suppose.
Well, I'm just saying you're going to have a chance. Like, I mean, and that's why I joke around with people. It's like, you know, like I'll ask, you know, my brother or a friend or something. Like, oh, you got, you know, here's this, whatever. And you know, whatever, if they're helping me with a project. And they're like, oh yeah, can I borrow your knife? And I'm like, no, you can't borrow my knife. You don't have a knife? Like, no, I'm like, I make very few exceptions. If women, I do not expect women to carry knives. I know that makes me a chauvinist. I do not care. I don't expect a woman to carry a freaking pocket knife. But if you're a dude hanging out around me, someone that I would generally hang out with, you're probably carrying a knife. If you don't, I'm going to give you all kinds of hell for it. Even if it's a little tiny pocket knife. Well, it's just
like back in the day when people would ask, hey, do you got the time? It's like, should have had a watch or... should have worn a watch or whatever.
It's exactly what it is.
It's the same thing. Like, be ready for shit.
You have to, because at the end of the day, it's like, man, you could not have a knife and it could be that, oh, damn it, now I can't cut this bag of baby carrots open. Or it could be that there's a wolf that's coming after you because you happen to go off trail when you were hiking. Or some dude mugs you in the street. And maybe you don't even use the knife to, like, necessarily defend himself or defend yourself. But guess what? You drew blood. Now you have blood on your shirt. It's not your blood. Now the cops can figure out who mugged you. It's simple shit like that that people don't even think about. Well, it's the whole nail. It's the skin under the fingernail thing. Like, if you can't subdue someone who's attacking you, at the very least, get their identification. Because there might be a chance that they could find that person, bring them to justice, and now justice is served. All is right with the world. Hopefully that's the case. But it's just, I don't know, man. The no knife thing really, I don't know, it's weird. My grandpa used to say a man should always have a lighter, a pocket knife, and a handkerchief on him. Now, I usually don't carry a lighter anymore because I'm often here and I have a lighter in the shop. But back when I smoked a lot more, I would have a lighter on me all the time. Handkerchief, I usually have a paper towel in my pocket. I have a weird habit of burning through paper towels. Like, I'm not a consumer of most things, but I kill rolls of paper towels because I'm like, wash my hands. Or, you know, oh, I got to blow my nose. I go for the paper towels. Like, we don't do tissues in my house. We do
paper towels. My wife has to have boxes of tissues, which, fine, whatever. That's what they're made for.
Yeah.
I have powerful nose blowing capabilities and I destroy, yeah. Like, I'll just blow through freaking tissue. So I grab a paper towel and she's just like, but it's so scratchy. I'm like, yeah, but my nose is fine.
We have mustaches and nose calluses, so we're good. But
and now that I'm in my 30s, I got nose hairs that if I don't take care of, like, high five my mustache occasionally, and that's when I know I need to trim shit.
That one's weird. I get that sometimes too. It's an old thing. But yeah, with the pocket knife, maybe you don't have a lighter, right? I think if I'm going anywhere, I'll probably bring a lighter of some sort. Definitely more times during the winter than the summer, but definitely I will be carrying a flashlight. And I have these really cool, man, I'm blanking on the freaking name of this place. I'll have to find it in a minute here. At the commercial break, but I like copper. It's just a thing. I love copper stuff, and it's a solid copper flashlight, and it's tiny. It's like, it fits one AAA, It is the perfect flashlight. It's made by Meritac, which is CountyCom, I believe, and which are local to me. CountyCom is like down the street from me. And they're these guys that produce this amazing, it's like overflow government spec type stuff. So if they have a, you know, someone needs, you know, some team or whatever, SWAT or whatever it may be, needs like, hey, we need a titanium pry bar for whatever reason. Like, I guess it's because it's non-magnetic, non-sparking. We need a titanium pry bar for our ordnance disposal unit or something, whatever it is. They'll make those, but then they'll have more that are available on the site. You can buy them. And they make these fucking awesome flashlights. I mean, I've had Olight, I've had Zebra Light, I've had all like the nice, fancy EDC brands. But this flashlight is just incredible.
And what was the brand of this?
CountyCom. I think it's called CountyCom. Let me double check. CountyCom.com. C-O-M-M. CountyCom.com. They have all kinds of crazy stuff on here. They got the flashlights. They've got watches. They've got tool stuff. If you're like a prepper and you want, I don't know, like certain radio stuff, they got awesome radios, like all kinds of cool stuff. They've been featured in like multiple books. Like people, certain books will like the character will mention that they have this particular item. And I go on the site and like, wow, they actually have this item.
That's pretty awesome. It's now, badass. In no way are we sponsored by these guys.
But not at all, but we would welcome it. I love these guys. Like I've had conversations with the owner a few times, and they just make good shit. Like, and you could spend a fortune on this site if you're not careful. Like this is like your wife walking into Target with a blank check. Like it could get really bad real quick. So yeah, I got to keep that in mind. But they have incredible stuff on here. Like pouches and bags and wallets and freaking cordage and stuff. So flashlights are always good. You know, a lot of guys carry other stuff like money clips. And maybe if you're really into fishing or something like that, or, you know, if you've got more capability like cargo pockets or something, I always recommend if you're going to be, this is a first aid thing. If you're going to be in any situation where you think ahead and you're like, hey, I could possibly get hurt doing what I'm doing. Like I'm going to go, I don't know. Snowboarding is a great example. Skiing, snowboarding. I'm going to go on a hike for the day. Always bring a trauma pack or at least some sort of real first aid kit. You're not going to need Band-Aids if you're going for a hike that day. Maybe you need some moleskin if you get some blisters and some new boots, but I don't on a daily basis don't do this, but I have one in every car. I have one in my shop, in my house, probably in my garage. If I have one in my backpack, you know, if I go out and I do something, if I go bike riding or something, it's a trauma pack made by Quick Clot, and it has a pouch of Quick Clot, which will stop an arterial bleed, which in my mind, I don't need a Band-Aid. I'll wrap a piece of my t-shirt around something if it won't stop bleeding. But if it doesn't stop bleeding and it's a more serious injury than that, like I was riding my bike and I fell, you know, rolled down a cliff and I got a branch sticking through my arm and there's very, very red blood gushing out. You might need a trauma pack. So it contains all the stuff you need. It's got,
I'm going to say if you have a branch sticking out of your arm, you definitely need a trauma pack.
You definitely do, but it could be anything. You could just, oops, I fell on a rusty sign on the side of the road while I was walking at night and it clipped, you know, my shoulder and now it will not stop bleeding. Throw a Quick Clot pack on that. It will stop bleeding. I wouldn't recommend putting it on like a carotid artery or anything, but, I'm also not a medical technician, and this is not advice, but I suggest that you carry something like that. Something in the first aid realm is always nice to have on you, even if it's just a paper towel or like a wet wipe or something in a bag.
It's always good to have that one stuff. Wet wipe in a Ziploc bag. There you go. That's all the EDC you need.
I got a concussion, got a knife, man. I got this wet wipe.
You got your handkerchief, and you got a bag with a wet wipe in it.
Well, I mean, what's the goal? Your goal is to survive the day at varying levels. Yeah, like, I mean, some guys go out and guess what? You're in the desert and you're wearing fucking camo and you're carrying a 60-pound backpack. And yes, you are carrying fucking Kwik Klot. You just are. But what if that's not the case and you just live in like inner city Chicago and you don't have that and someone does shoot at you or whatever the case.
If you're in Chicago, your chance of getting stabbed is probably pretty high. So you should probably carry some Kwik Klot.
That's true, among other things. But yeah, I mean, I look at the basics. For EDC, you're going to be looking at fire, possibly. You don't necessarily need that, but definitely a knife for various reasons. Definitely cell phone is always good. Most people have cell phones. Flashlight is always nice to have, and you can get them so tiny that they don't even exist in your pocket anymore. They just, you put them in your pocket, they disappear. You know? And, you know, what did I say? First aid already? It's just good to be prepared. It's a be prepared episode. And we didn't even go into detail. This is all...
We didn't even talk about guns.
Yeah, and
That'll be a future episode, probably for a guest that we're going to have.
Probably a guest. I think we'll bring on an expert. I am not an expert in that whatsoever. You know, I grew up around it and I enjoy it, but I love my bow, to be honest. I find archery to be a lot more fun for me. But then again, I live in California, so take that for what it's worth.
Well, but that's also, you're not going to be walking around with a bow self-defense.
Am I not going to be walking around with
that? At the same time, it might just be a preventative too. If you see somebody walking down the street and you're like, I'm going to mug that guy. Oh, he's got a bow. Probably not. That might work.
Or is it just a stick with some string on it? You never know, man.
It's an atlatl.
Those are cool. But yeah, I mean, there you have it. That's just kind of the way I view EDC. This is a very light EDC episode. We're probably going to go into this deeper at some point. Like Sean said, I definitely have some great ideas for guests for these things. And we'll let you know. I don't want to like shout them out on this episode or anything, but I think definitely stay tuned. Most of these are going to be off the cusp. Fun, you know, that's kind of the plan, just kind of BS and talk regular. Maybe it'll be informative, but
and you should, you know, sit back with a pipe and a beer or a whiskey or drink, you know, whatever you got.
Yeah,
I'm smoking some Escudo right now from 2017 in a new little wide shank Rhodesian I made, and I am actually drinking a Busch Light Apple limited edition.
I've never heard of that.
It is shockingly good and does not taste like apple juice.
I'm drinking a Spindrift sparkling water. And what am I smoking? I am smoking a little cigar. I'm blanking on the name. Bandito.
That's one of the little cheroots, right?
The little cheroots. Yeah. Cheroots. They're nice. It's not actually, Bandito's not really a cheroot. It's kind of like a machine-made cigar.
Now, that could probably be an EDC. You just don't want to carry it in the same bag as your wet wipe.
Yes. You don't want your wet wipe contaminating it.
Well, I don't know what else to say about EDCs.
Well, I mean, EDC can be your clothing, like your watch.
You know, most places we have to have an EDC of a shirt and shoes.
Yes. No shirt, no shoes, no sir. Oh wait,
that they never gone. They never say anything about pants though. No shoes, no shirt, no service. But they never say pants. So
that is,
I might be the guy walking around no pants, but damn if I got my boots on and my shirt. So the moral of the story is have an EDC, but you got to figure out what that means for you on a daily basis. I mean, that might change with the season. It might change with the day. It might change with where you're going.
Could be a pen. Like, I don't carry a pen. Most people need to carry a pen. Some people carry a little screwdriver because they're in, you know, IT and they need to open up computers. I mean,
they could have just had a Leatherman.
They could have just had a Leatherman. Go buy a Leatherman. Tell them Chris sent you. No, no, wait, hold on. Tell them Chris Morgan of Morgan Pipe sent you. And then be sure to reiterate that so that they can. I don't think I'm going to benefit from this.
I don't think you understand. Chris Morgan told me that that I need to buy this.
You told me I have
wink,
to.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Not sponsored by them either.
I want the special one that he tested that he won't tell anyone about.
Yeah. It had a flamethrower and a roller skate.
Oh, man.
And a spork.
Can't wait till that comes out.
It's going to be great. All right.
Hope you guys are having a great week. We will be back again with since these episodes are spanning quite a long distance, as soon as possible until we get on a good schedule and Sean stops doing his craft fairs.
Oh man, it's been such a busy summer. Hopefully things are, we're going to try to make this very consistent. You know, I don't know if we're doing every other week or every week. I'm not sure yet, but hopefully once winter hits and Chris and I both have a little more time, we'll be able to, you know, have a schedule that everybody can count on and listen. And
it's actually a good thing that Sean's in Montana because it gets cold there, and warm-blooded creatures tend to not move a lot when it gets cold. So,
oh, I can't wait for it to be cold, so I've got to actually like bundle up in my shop instead of sweating.
Or that you could just like, oh, it's raining, I guess I can't do any yard work today, I'll go sit in the shop and like tinker with things. I miss that. I do hate the summer a lot. The only part about the summer that I really do enjoy is that at night I can go like sit in my hammock and it's like 70 degrees and it's beautiful and it's clear and you see bats flying around.
That's borderline too hot for me though.
But that's cool. That's nice cool weather here. Like I don't know. I have a max. Like I think when it's about 85, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm done with this.
Yeah. Well, it's cooled down to 81, so it's about time for me to go sit in my hammock.
It's still 90 here. Ugh.
That's gross. All right. Talk to you later. Yep.
All right. Bye.